भद्रं कर्णेभिश्विनयामदेवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुपागुंसस्तु नूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नः साक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
We're on verse 2 of this last section.
Kamanya kamayate manyamanaha. Kamanya kamayate manyamanaha. Sakama virajayate tatra tatra. Sakama virajayate tatra tatra. Paryaptakamasya kritatmanah.
It is a sandhi here. Okay. And in my book, it's kritatmanah tu iha eva. Okay. Tu iha eva sarve praviliyanti kamaha. Sarve praviliyanti kamaha. Let me break this in here, I'll show you. Kaman yaha kamayate manyamanaha saha kamabihi jayate tetra tetra pariyapta kamasya kritatmanaha tu iha eva sarve praviliyanti kamaha. See? Shankar introduces this verse. Mumukshoho kama tyagaha eva pradhanam sadhanam. He says, for the mumukshu, for the one who's desirous of liberation, giving up of desire, kama tyaga, the giving up of desire, is the pradhana sadhana, is the primary sadhana. And so this is what this verse is about. So he says, talking first, so he shows this in this verse, Kriti Darshyati. He's talking about the samsari, the one who is not yet a mumukshu, is not yet akamaha. Akamaha means... Akamaha means somebody who no longer desires, let me have this to be happy, let me have this to be happy. So the person who has vairagya is akamaha. So the person who's not yet an akamaha, does not yet have that dispassion of vairagya. So here, yaha, the person who, he who, first of all, manyamanaha kaman, the person who is reflecting over, thinking about, objects of desire. If I could only have this, now this would be really something nice to have. The qualities of this particular thing would really enhance my life. If I could have this, I think that would be good. And so a person who starts to really reflecting on a given object, that's the manyamanaha. They're thinking about, reflecting over. So the person is reflecting over what? Kama, kaman, objects of desire. That person reflecting over these objects, then what? Kamiyate, desires them. Right? You build up, in fact, the Bhagavad Gita verse that's just coming in, the Bhagavad Gita talks about this sequence. The first thing that happens is you see an object, it looks very interesting, that looks like that would be nice. That would be really nice. You know, that would really be good. I think that I would really like to have that object. It starts out with, as Shankara says in his Bhasha, it starts out with recognizing and thinking about all of the positive qualities the particular object or situation has. Right? That's how it starts. Once once that has started, that itself will start moving and will generate some steam. The steam that it generates is in the form of desire. The desire to actually have the object. That desire then brings about the pravritti, the energy to go toward the object through either dharmic or adharmic means, as according to the Vashya, which is obvious. Right? We something strikes us, we develop the desire for it, and then as we develop the desire, then we go about discovering a means to actually attain that object. Object stands for situation, person, so many things. Whatever may be an object of desire. Okay. So then either dharmically or adharmically, I make attempts to achieve that. So now here in this verse he says, so the person who thinking about the qualities of this particular object, the person who then develops the desire kamyate, develops a desire for these objects, that person, sa kamabihi jayate tetra, that person is born there, along with the objects of desire. Okay. So there's different levels of looking, but tetra tetra means where if I have an object of desire, and I have a set of objects of desire. This particular set is to be found here, that's tetra. Okay. Tetra literally means there. It can be found there, in this particular loka. Then I will be born there along with the desires. The objects of desires have to be there, but I can't just take a birth there. Right there, without the desire. Say, for instance, in this life, I'm perseverating, thinking over and over about this particular object that I really want. It would make me so happy. And so now, because of that, I take a birth, right, in a place where those objects are, but I don't have the desire for the objects. Now, I have to take a birth with those desires will accompany me to that place where those desires are. So now this is true. What they're talking about here is in reference really to rebirth, working to get a better situation in this next life, doing karmas and working for getting a heavenly existence, or working for a better birth where I can then have these experiences. So that's how I spend my energy, working for a better birth where I can be born into a loka, into a plane where these experiences can be fulfilled. And so this type of thing is what keeps the jiva going. You know, I'm following after my desires. Now they were looking at it really from birth to birth to birth. But in fact, this is what we're doing in this life also. Right? Something we're thinking about an object that we would really like to have. Then we develop thinking about this wonderful thing, then we develop a desire for it. Then the desire propels us to move, to engage in activity, hopefully dharmic, but dharmic or adharmic activity, to help me fulfill that desire. So I'll find myself being propelled to the place where the object of desire is. The object of whose desire? My desire. Okay, so the one who has the desire is propelled to the place where the desire is. If you just think about it in your daily life, this is what we're doing, right? Okay. We are moving toward the place where the object of our desire is, so that we can fulfill ourselves by fulfilling that particular desire. So this is exactly how the world goes, how the individual moves from life to life to life to life. And he says, sa kamabihi, he with those desires, jayate, is born there. Wherever, tetra means wherever that is. Like, tetra means there, so it says, Sanskrit will say, there. Means wherever that is. Okay. And he says, but paryapta kamasya, for the person whose desires are fulfilled, apta means they have gained, pari, completely. From all sides, say you have those desires, a person has desires. Here's this Pariyapta, all desires, Pariyaptasya, for the one for whom all desires have been fulfilled. How could that be? In Swamiji's Bhasha, he talks about this because you could, for the moment, fulfill all your desires. Yeah? So you have a little desire, a bunch of little desires floating around there, and then one great big desire. And just at one moment in time, all of the desires are fulfilled. Everything that you want, you think, wow, everything that I have, everything that I've ever wanted. But the problem is that a new thing can come along, and usually does come along really quickly. You could just have for an instant, you could have, oh, I have everything that I've ever wanted. I'm an optasya. I'm somebody, I have fulfilled all my desires. But palm optasya, somebody, you know, everything has been fulfilled for me. But the problem is, a new goody can come. Because all of those desires that I've fulfilled are limited, right? There's still many, many, many more. I just haven't thought of them. You know, I haven't watched the newest ads. Somebody hasn't, you know, told me about something that will be very enticing. So that's only a temporary condition. When they say, pariyapta kamasya, for the one for whose desires are completely fulfilled, how can that be? Because that person is a krita atmanaha. For a krita atmana, that means for the one whose self, literally, it means for the one whose self has been made. Krita means has been made. But when we use the word in Sanskrit, we use the word krit, to do, it has to relate to the appropriate action. So here it's for the one who, for whom the self is known. Not the one whose self is identified with what we call the upara, the lower self. Lower self means this. What do we mean, lower or higher self? I'm taking this right from the Bhasha here. For me, it's an ajnani, somebody who doesn't have self-knowledge. Okay? Myself, which is the self of this body, right? This very self, which is the self of this body, the conscious being which this body enjoys, as we did in the meditation, your physical body and your mind are totally pervaded by your being, by the conscious being that you are. So this body fully enjoys me. The problem is that I take this body to be the me which the body enjoys. Right? Because I can say, I am the very self, the very being of this body, is different than saying, I am this body. If I say, I, the very self of this body, am this body, am one with this body, then I become finite. I become subject to the ills of this body, the temporality of this body, the gunas, the qualities of this body, which may be limited. They're always going to be limited, in fact. They may be less limited than yours, but more limited than somebody else's. Right? This physical body is on a grid, right? So it's on a comparative grid. It's on a scale. You're somewhere on the scale. In terms of health, in terms of wealth, in terms of age, in terms of intelligence, in terms of good looks, in terms of everything you can possibly think of, you are on a scale, a measurable scale, where there are a countless number of people who are below you and a countless number of people who are above you. And so when that's the situation, there is no way to win. There is no way to be whole and complete. Right? Because there's people who are better than you and people that are less. It's an endless type of situation. So here, the one who does not recognize myself as Brahman, as limitless, that this conscious being that I am, that is the very being of this body, that is the very being of this mind, that this self, that is the truth of the body and the truth of the mind, is the truth of the whole. The conscious being that I am, you know, this me that I have taken to be the body, is in fact limitless in the self of all beings. Right? So it's not about recognizing a new self. It's about recognizing that the self of this body is yourself. The self of this mind, the self that this mind enjoys, so that this mind can say, I am a conscious being. That the conscious being that this self, that this mind enjoys, that allows me to say that, is the very self that this universe enjoys, is the very self which is Ishvara, is the very self which you enjoy. See, that's a huge difference. Because for the Ajnani, it doesn't go that far. The me stops at the body. Right? And then you all become something else. For the Jnani, the me doesn't stop at the body. Right? This, the me which the body enjoys, me means the Atma, the self, the conscious being, that the body enjoys, is the self that the chimes enjoy, is the self that you enjoy, is the self that Ishvara enjoys. The vision of the Jnani is that I am the self of all beings, that my being is the self of all beings. So that's the Paravidya. So the one who has self-knowledge, the one for whom all desires have been fulfilled, Pariyasa Kamaha, is the one who knows I am the self of all beings. That this Atma, that the Aparavidya takes, the one who does not know, takes has a lesser identification. Right? Because limited. Apara means limited. It's a limited identification. If I say this being which is in fact infinite is this body, right? You see, there's a difference. This is the satyam, this is exactly the satyam mithya. Just explain that to them. If I use the example of the clay pot, which is the satyam mithya example that we go back over time and again. If I take a clay pot, the satyam, the reality of that pot, is the clay. The potness, the form, is totally dependent for its being on the clay. To the point, that we can say, there's nothing there but clay. But then there's the pot. Right? But really, if I say to you, using this example, all of us will agree to this. I hold up a clay pot and I say, you know, the truth, I can say so many things. The truth of the pot is clay. Yes, that's true. Because it's material cause, it's what's actually there. That's true. The truth of the pot is clay. Then I can also say another statement. The pot totally depends on clay for its being. If I were to remove the clay, there'd be no pot there. Yes, that's true. Another sentence I can say. In fact, there's only clay there. The pot has, there is no pot. But there's only clay. There's no thing pot apart from clay. But because we experience the pot, we use the pot, we say the pot has a reality, an order of reality that we call mithya. Mithya means it depends for its being on the clay. Right? That's mithya. The truth of the clay pot is the clay. That's the satyam. But the mithya is the pot. What does it mean that the pot depends on the clay? So now look, here I say, And we're talking now, you have to go into your own experience of who you are. You say, I am this body. This body is a conscious being. Let's put it like that. This body is a conscious being. I am the conscious being which is this body. Now what we say is, for the jnani, the krita atmanaha, if the jnani says, this conscious being is this body, what would he or she mean? It would be better to say, use a language like this. This physical body is totally dependent on my being for its consciousness, as much as the pot is dependent on the clay. And in fact, when you sit with yourself, when you sit with your mind, when you sit with your physical body, with your sense organs, this experience, what do you experience? This body is conscious. Sense organs are conscious. The mind is conscious. The conscious being is that I am. The conscious being that I am is totally pervasive to this body, is totally pervasive to the mind, is totally pervasive to the sense organs, just like the clay is totally pervasive to the pot. You can't remove yourself from this body, right? But you can remove the body from yourself. You can't remove yourself from the body because you can't remove yourself from anything. Anything that is in the realm of your experience, you can't remove yourself from, because if you remove yourself from, that experience is no more. But the opposite is not true. All of the experiences, including the experience of your body and your sense organs and your mind and your perceptions, all of them come and go. It makes absolutely no difference to your being. The presence or absence of any type of cognition or any type of experience is totally irrelevant to the clay, to the existence of your being. It's just whatever experience is there, that experience enjoys existence. Whatever experience is there, that experience enjoys consciousness. Conscious existence is the same. The consciousness existence that every single experience enjoys is me, is yourself, is the conscious being which you are. And you try to see if you can make that variable. It's not variable, it's invariable. It's invariable, and there is no experience that's ever away from it. And so the jnani knows this para-atma, knows I am the invariable conscious being, that no experience is ever away from, mm-hmm. Which means my being is the truth of all beings. My being is the truth of I, so instead of saying all beings, it's not that there's two beings. My truth, my being, this me, this conscious being that I am, is the very being, is the very self of all namarupa, of all names and forms, of all experiences. There's no dvaita, there's no duality there. You can never separate consciousness from any experience. You can never separate existence from any experience. It's not like there's a little existence over here and none over here. You cannot even say there's a little consciousness over here and none over here. Because in terms of your own experience as a jiva, we'll forget about Ishvara for now, in terms of your own experience as a jiva, you may say, this table doesn't enjoy consciousness from its own standpoint. Right? The table is not looking back at you and talking to you. Okay? The table, but you are looking back and talking to me, so you are conscious. The table isn't, this desk isn't, this chair isn't. But that's totally irrelevant to whether or not this is in consciousness. Whether the object itself reflects consciousness is irrelevant to its being. Right? So now you look in terms of all of your experience. Is there an experience that you have, any experience anywhere at any time, that is away from consciousness? Either the thing is an object of consciousness, there's the knower consciousness, the knowing consciousness, the known consciousness, it makes no difference. The knower, knowing, known consciousness are just all aspects of the names, different types of names and forms that are really nothing but consciousness. And so for the one who knows this, that person is a kritatmanaha. For that person, there's this pariyaptikamasya, because there is nothing else to be gained to have a desire for it. Anything I think of, I am already that. Right? So if I am already that, the very idea of desire becomes mute. So for the person who recognizes this, for that person, rather than transmigrating at the drop of the, when the body drops, rather than transmigrating, for that person, sarve prabhiliyanti kamaha, all of the desires resolve here itself. For that jnani, all of the desires resolve here itself. What that implies is that therefore there's no gasoline. There's nothing to push the car forward. In other words, if a car, what we say is, sometimes the continuation of the jiva, you know, is likened to, we'll say like this. If a car runs out of gas, right, it may roll for a while. Right? If a car runs out of gas, it'll roll for a while. But the gas is gone. And so, once the rolling comes to an end, once the prarabdha comes to an end, the karma that caused you to take this birth, there is no gas to push it forward anymore. Mm-hmm. For the jiva, once the avidya, once the ignorance has been removed, so that now I know myself, right? The mind no longer has this problem of seeking the self out here, seeking my ananda, my fullness out here. That problem is no longer there. When that is the case, then there's nothing to propel the jiva, the individual, to take another birth. Because the mind is already resolved in the truth of the whole. Right? And so that really is the, we would call, dissolution of the jiva. Think of it yourself. If the mind itself, if the ignorance is gone, and so the ignorance being gone, the mind recognizes, I am the whole. And the very being that you are is the content of that whole. Right? Where then will the mind need to go or want to go to fulfill itself? Where is it going to go? It's already there. See? The mind is already there. So instead of trying to find the self out here in the Nama-rupas, it's now resolved itself into the self of the Nama-rupas. Nama-rupas means name and form. Instead of through sensory perception going out trying to find the self, like trying to find the self in these names and forms, it is resolved into the self of the names and forms. Right? The self of the pot is clay. The self of you is consciousness. Self of the pot is clay. The self of this table is wood. Right? But what is the self of the universe? What is the self? What is it that is the truth of the entire universe, all names and forms? Right? It's the very being that the universe enjoys. It's the very existence that the universe enjoys. The material of the universe is the being that it enjoys. That being is not going to be an object, a nama-rupa, a name and form around the being. It's going to be the self of all name and forms. The self of all name and forms itself is not going to be a name and form. So who is it going to be? How are you going to find that self? You can only be that self. There's nowhere you can go for it. Then when you recognize I am that self, and that in fact there is no experience away from that self, then where does the mind go? It goes to that self. Where is that self? Does it have to travel for it? It can't travel for it because that self is not an object. I am that self. And I am that self. How far is the mind removed from that self that I am? And how far is the mind removed from the self that I am? I am the self of the mind. Right? I'm the clay of the pot and the self of the mind. So there is no distance. I am what I seek. I am totally what I seek, without any distance whatsoever. The only distance is the distance of ignorance. Say, I am what I seek, means there is absolutely nowhere to go. It's like the pot recognizing, oh my gosh, you know, I am the clay. Mm. Now where, should it meditate? It does need to meditate, actually. It has to recognize over and over and over the obvious. But how is it going to meditate? it might send my mind away. How's the pot going to meditate on the clay? It has to sit with the reality of itself. The pot has to sit with the reality of itself. I have to sit with the reality of myself. That conscious being that is invariable, that is not away from anything, let alone from my body, mind, sense, or is. What in my experience, in the totality, accepting all the sense organs, accepting the thoughts, accepting the mind, everything, all the perceptions, what is totally, 100% not away from anything that I experience? Equally present to every level of experience, whether it be imaginal, you know, perceptual, emotional, thoughts or perceptions through sense perception. What is the invariable being that has no distance from any of that and it's not an object? The truth of all of it? So not an object. If it's an object, right, it's only one among many. But what is it that, what is it right here and now that is the invariable? And that invariable is me. You say, it's me, but I'm this body. No, this body is one, it's part of this. This body is part of this creation, which I illumine. This body is part of this creation which enjoys myself. What about my sense organs? These sense organs are part of this creation which enjoys my being. Not away, the body's not away from consciousness, neither are you. Anything, all of you in this room are not away from my consciousness, and I'm not away from yours. This body's not away from my consciousness. These sense organs enjoy my consciousness. Me. The mind enjoys my consciousness. My moods enjoy my consciousness. I enjoy my consciousness. I am my consciousness. Right? I am that. I am that. You know? And that is invariable. It's invariable. There's nothing away from it. That's why in the previous verse, if I think of something, I am that. You have an imagination, you are that. But you are invariable. So I would say, if it's so helpful to use your imagination, if you imagine a meadow, you are that meadow, but why don't you fear? The meadow could have a big monster in it. You're a meadow and a monster has come in the meadow. Why aren't you afraid? Because you are invariable. You're the satyam of the meadow. You're the truth of the meadow. It's your meadow. It's your imagination. But the imagination can't harm you. And that's your experience of this creation also. Unless you're identified with something in the creation, like this body, mind, sense organs, this body is perishable. All of the objects that I own are perishable. All of the money I have in the bank is perishable. Everything is subject to destruction. Absolutely everything. That's the nature of the universe. And so if I'm identified with any given thing, then I have karma. I must have some desire to protect this or protect that or protect this. But the Atma, your being, doesn't need protection. There is nothing to protect. In fact, the mind of the jnani seeks refuge in its own invariable truth, the self that cannot be harmed. The mind seeks refuge. It's like the clay running to the pot. The pot running to the clay. There's nowhere for it to run. It need not run anywhere, but that's where it takes its refuge. That's the moksha. The moksha is in the recognition. Recognition. My being is free. I am free. Myself is free. Who needs that recognition? The mind. The mind is the one that thought, I, the mind, am bound, and I, the mind, have to become free. What that mind recognizes is that I, the self, have always been free, and the mind doesn't have to worry about that anymore. The mind can go on changing and thinking and feeling, which is its own swabhava, its own nature. The body goes on growing old and dying, that's its nature. You know? All of these things occur according to their nature, but they all occur as a manifestation of my being, which is changeless. this is your experience. This experience is not away from you. It's the reality of yourself that simply needs to be recognized. It is not a matter of becoming, nor is it a matter of trying to have a new experience. It's a matter of just sitting with the experience, the reality of the experience that is natural to you, and owning it, seeing it, understanding it, and owning it, which takes some time.
Mm-hmm.
Takes some time because we've spent lifetimes of identifying with the mithya and the satya. Lifetimes have been, I am this body, in this situation, who needs this to be happy. That's the identity, beginningless. You know, and so now a person becomes a mumukshu and they come to knowledge, and then they recognize the reality of themselves. You know, but the mind has thousands of prior conditions, prior conditioning that it has to kind of work through and see over and over and over from this direction and that direction and that direction. That's why in Upanishad, there are many Upanishads, and Upanishad is not just one verse. The teacher can't just say to the student, you're free, forget it, everything's fine, don't worry. Be happy, go. You know, that's the truth of it, don't you see it? Isn't it fine? Isn't it easy? Go. It is fine, it is easy, but it's easy once it's understood on all of these variety of levels, with all of the questions that we may have, you know. And so that's why Upanishad so systematically goes through solving these problems. This, we hear, now we're at the end of the Upanishad. Now the teacher is really wrapping up and just telling you some things that are of interest, you know. These things are of interest. Like, it is interesting to think, and it's a tidbit, and it makes sense. This is the tidbit. As a jiva, if you don't have self-knowledge, you will continue to take birth after birth after birth, following your karmas, following your desires. They will propel you into situation after situation after situation, birth after birth after birth after birth. If you're a jivan mukta, if you have this knowledge, then for you, all of these karmas, all of these karmas, all of these desires are resolved here. Right? And so there is nothing to propel you. There is no jiva left. The avidya has been removed. And having removed the avidya, having removed the ignorance, the self-ignorance, the pravritti, what we call the energy to go here or there, is not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am already here. I am already the whole. And so when the body, when the prarabdha runs out, the karmas that caused you to take this body exhaust themselves, and then the body drops, and that is the end of the jiva. There is no more jiva. You then are just the whole. You are the Ishvara that you are. Without identification with the limited upadi within Ishvara, you are simply the whole, which is who you are. Really. The problem is, because of ajnana, there's a beginningless ignorance in terms of this manifestation of the jiva. And so from the experiences of this jiva, there's limitation, there's ajnana to be removed. When the ajnana, when the ignorance is removed, that jiva is no more. It's there in like dug the bija in a bird seed form, as long as the prarabdha karma has to exhaust. Once the karmas are exhausted and the karmas means and the karmas have been resolved for you, the desires are resolved for you, then there is no ahankara there. There's no avidya there to make me take myself to be a jiva. There's no one there to take myself to be a jiva to continue on. I now am Ishwara, that's it. And it's not like I've become Ishwara. I am Ishwara. It's not like I'm not becoming Ishvara. I am Ishvara. But this physical body, mind, sense organs is limited. Yeah. You understand? In spite of this limited body, mind, sense organs, which is a jiva, enjoys jivatvam, who are you? I am Brahman. Who is Brahman? Brahman is Ishvara. Right? There's no Ishvara apart from Brahman. So what do we mean by when we say Ishvara, the Lord, the limitless manifestation of knowledge? Whose limitless manifestation of knowledge is it? Brahman. Who is Brahman? Me. Why do you call me Brahman? Because my nature, as the Satchit Ananda that I am, is limitless. Because of avidya, because of ignorance, it's taken to be limited. I am taken to be limited. By who? By the mind. By the mind that has ignorance. That mind with ignorance takes my being, my timeless, limitless being, to be limited, bound by this physical body. When that ignorance is removed, right, and the body drops, then where is that jivatvam? The jivatvam is not even here now. For the jnani, where's the jivatvam? There's no jiva. I'm not a jiva. I'm Brahman. Right? For the one who knows, I'm not a jiva, I'm Brahman. But then here's this jiva running out its time, the prarabdha. But that's a dugdha bija. There's nobody here who says, I am a jiva. It means I am a limited being. You see what I'm saying? And so, is that going to change when this body drops? Is the jiva going to become, the individual going to become an ajnani again? You know? No. Are you going to forget yourself? No, because you never are away to forget yourself. Forget yourself. You forget things that are away from you. Say you're trying to practice your memorizing something. You memorize something that's not always with you. You can forget something that's not always with you. How can you forget your being? It's always here. It's the very being that you are. So there's not a problem of forgetfulness there. Okay. Let's take a minute.